Why does obesity associate so strongly with poverty if it's caused by overeating in prosperous societies? This contradiction should immediately make us suspicious of conventional wisdom. The Pima Indians of Arizona offer a striking historical example. When anthropologists studied them in the early 1900s, they were already notably obese, despite having just transitioned from prosperity to poverty. What changed wasn't prosperity or food quantity, but quality. Trading posts had introduced sugar and white flour, while government rations consisted largely of refined carbohydrates. This pattern repeats throughout history. When traditional populations adopt Western foods, particularly refined flour and sugar, obesity and diabetes follow, regardless of overall calorie intake or physical activity. The poverty-obesity connection isn't about abundance, it's about the specific foods that dominate modern Western diets, especially in lower-income communities where refined carbohydrates form the foundation of daily nutrition. What if obesity isn't about how much we eat, but what we eat? 20 calories, less than a single bite of hamburger or 3 potato chips, is all it takes to gain 50 pounds over 25 years. This tiny number exposes the fundamental flaw in the energy balance theory of obesity. If weight gain were truly about calories in versus calories out, maintaining weight would require matching energy intake and expenditure with an accuracy of 1/20 of 1%, an exactness, as Cornell's Eugene Dubois noted, which is equaled by few mechanical devices. Yet many people remain lean for decades without counting calories, and even obese individuals maintain stable weights rather than continuously gaining. Animals maintain appropriate weights without food scales or calorie apps. Your dog doesn't get progressively fatter despite eating roughly the same amount daily. Something more sophisticated than simple calorie counting must regulate body weight, mechanisms that can be disrupted by specific dietary factors. The arithmetic makes the conventional wisdom impossible. Our bodies must have regulatory systems far more complex than the simplistic eat less, move more model suggests. Fat distribution reveals important insights about obesity. People develop fat in different places, double chins, ankles, or love handles, patterns that calories alone can't explain. If obesity were simply about energy balance, wouldn't excess fat distribute evenly throughout the body? Gender differences further challenge the calories model. Men typically store fat above the waist, women below. During puberty, girls develop fat in breasts, hips, and thighs, while boys lose fat and gain muscle. Rare disorders like progressive lipodystrophy, where patients lose fat above the waist while gaining it below, show that fat distribution isn't determined by eating habits or exercise. Genetics plays a major role. Body types run in families, and identical twins show remarkably similar fat patterns. This genetic component is evident in livestock breeding, where Aberdeen Angus cattle are bred for marbling fat while Jersey dairy cows remain lean despite similar diets. These differences reflect how bodies partition energy. Sophisticated regulatory mechanisms, not simple calorie math, determine our fat storage patterns. The conventional wisdom about weight loss, eat less, exercise more, rests on a misconception. Calories consumed and calories expended aren't independent variables, but intimately linked. When we restrict calories, our bodies compensate by reducing energy expenditure, making us lethargic and cold. Similarly, increasing physical activity increases hunger. The Women's Health Initiative demonstrates this effect. Nearly 20,000 women followed a low-fat diet, consuming 360 fewer calories daily. Yet after 8 years, they lost an average of only 2 pounds, while their waistlines increased by 1/2 inch. This compensation phenomenon explains why traditional dieting has a 95% failure rate over 5 years. Our bodies aren't passive calorie processors. They actively defend against weight loss through hormonal and metabolic adaptations. Semi-starvation might produce short-term results, but our bodies inevitably compensate, making such approaches unsustainable. What if we've been fighting our bodies instead of working with their natural regulatory systems? The link between carbohydrates and obesity has deep historical roots. In 1825, Jean-Anthelme Brillat-Savarin identified two obesity causes: natural predisposition and consumption of starches and flours, especially with sugar. His solution was simple: abstain from everything that is starchy or floury. This understanding remained common through the 1960s. In literature, Count Vronsky avoided starchy foods and desserts to maintain racing weight. In 1862, William Harvey prescribed William Banting a meat-based, low-carbohydrate diet, helping him lose 50 pounds. Banting's published account became so popular that banting entered the English language as a verb meaning to diet. Medical literature consistently recommended avoiding carbohydrates for weight loss until the 1960s-70s, when authorities began rejecting this approach as bizarre and potentially dangerous. Notably, this shift coincided with the beginning of our current obesity and diabetes epidemics, suggesting we may have abandoned centuries of practical wisdom for a flawed hypothesis. Obesity is fundamentally a hormonal imbalance, not a caloric one. Research since the early 1960s has established that when insulin levels rise, we store fat. When they fall, we burn fat. Insulin levels are primarily determined by the carbohydrates we eat, especially easily digestible sweet ones. As Harvard's George Cahill summarized, "Carbohydrate is driving insulin, is driving fat." While multiple hormones affect fat metabolism, insulin dominates. It activates lipoprotein lipase, LPL, on fat cells while suppressing it on muscle cells, directing fat towards storage rather than burning. It also inhibits hormone-sensitive lipase, HSL, preventing stored fat from being released. Even slightly elevated insulin prevents fat burning while promoting storage. This explains why diabetics often gain weight on insulin therapy. It's insulin's direct lipogenic effect, independent of food intake. Normally, storage and burning balance over 24 hours, but even a tiny imbalance can lead to obesity over decades. Elevated insulin extends fat storing periods while shortening fat burning ones, suggesting obesity may be more about biochemistry than willpower. The carbohydrates making us fat are also driving modern chronic diseases. Metabolic syndrome, characterized by expanding waistlines, high blood pressure, elevated triglycerides, low HDL, small dense LDL, and glucose intolerance, represents the intermediate step between carbohydrate consumption and heart disease. Over a quarter of American adults suffer from this condition. Low-carbohydrate, high-fat diets improve every marker of metabolic syndrome, contradicting decades of conventional advice. The Women's Health Initiative revealed that reducing fat consumption by 25% yielded no benefits for heart disease, stroke, cancer rates, or weight loss. Meanwhile, triglycerides, elevated by carbohydrates, not fat, are a significant heart disease risk factor. Metabolic syndrome extends beyond heart disease to Alzheimer's, sometimes called type 3 diabetes, and most cancers. The simplest explanation? What makes us fat also makes us sick. The solution? Minimize insulin-stimulating foods, refined flour products, liquid carbohydrates, starches, and sugars. Unlike traditional diets requiring semi-starvation, carbohydrate restriction allows you to eat protein and fat until satisfied, while still losing weight and improving health markers. Perhaps the key to health isn't counting calories or avoiding fat, but understanding how foods affect our hormones and recognizing our bodies as sophisticated regulatory systems rather than simple calorie calculators.